Good morning to everybody. Thank you all for coming. If I can remind you, please, to turn off your phones so that we don't get any musical interludes. It's also a pleasure to welcome and thank the sponsors for today's share. Today's share is sponsored by Cookie and Howard Mizell, sitting over here, in loving memory of Cookie's mother, Anna Beer, Le'ilu Nishmas, Chana Tova, Bat Yaakov, Halevi, Vesima, Miriam, Zichron Livrocha, on her third Yortzeit. So thank you for the sponsorship. The Yortzeit is Chaf Av, which is today. So that's appropriate. And we should learn Le'ilu Nishmata. Please God, it should be an aliyah for the Neshama. And we welcome the sponsorship and thank them and anyone else who sponsors in the future. Right. We're on part two. And I can see already in the audience a few people who weren't in part one. So let me give you a little bit of an upgrade into part two, if you like. Give you a bit of part one very quickly. We are looking at the fascinating, very controversial in its time, and we'll see today when and how, issue of the re-establishment of the Sanhedrin in our times. Last week we looked at the basic background to the Sanhedrin, when it was set up, the Psukim in the Torah that deal with it, the historical realities of the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, the exile at the beginning voluntary of the Sanhedrin from the Beit HaMikdash complex, and then its consequent exiles around Israel, Yavna, Usha, Shefarim, etc., etc., and we talked about that. We talked about the very controversial Rambam, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, where the Rambam wrote, first of all, in his commentary on the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in chapter 4, that I think that we can restart the Sanhedrin today. There is a system whereby we can bring back Smicha, and we'll see the Rambam's sack on this in a second. And he sets out how he thinks that can be. And he's pretty definitive about it in the commentary on the Mishnah. In the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam said that the mitzvah to have a Sanhedrin is a constant mitzvah. It's not just a mitzvah during the times of Geula or the times of Mashiach. It's a mitzvah even bizman hazeh. We have to try the best we can to get one. And if we can't, we can't. But it's a mitzvah which applies. And then the Rambam writes, and we'll start with this. We saw this last time, but I've brought it again to give us a context this time. The Rambam writes in his Mishnah Torah the few lines that will be the fuel, if you like, for everything we're going to see for the rest of today. Let's read them again together. In number one, Hari Shalai Haya Be'eretz Yisrael Ala Samach Echad. If there is only one person left, one man left with the original smicha, and we talked last week about how the modern day smicha that we call when a rabbi is given authority to pask and shailas, that's not what we're talking about here. The modern day smicha is a heta hora'ah, it's just permission for the rav to pask and in the presence, if you like, or given during the lifetime of his teacher. And the original smicha was something quite different. It was passed down ish mipi ish from Moshe Rabbeinu through Yeshua. Says the Rambam, if there's only one person left in Eretz Yisrael, we'll see this is important in a minute. Moshe Shnayim B'tzidoi, he can just put two other non-musmachim, people without smicha, next to him. V'saymech shivim ke'echot. Okay, ozeh chazeh. They can, and he can give smicha to 70 more, even though he's on his own and he's co-opted two others who are not musmachim. He can give smicha at the same time to 70 people, ozeh chazeh, or one after the other. They can reform the Sanhedrin. V'achakach yasehu v'hashivim bet din ha-gadol. And after that, they can form the new bet din ha-gadol, the Sanhedrin, the Yismichu Bate Dinim Acherim, and they can start the whole process off. So if you just have one person left who has this original smicha, you can get the whole thing rolling. And then he says, V'niran li hadvarim. And I think, and we see that we saw this last week, that this is not unusual for the Rambam to say this. It means he thinks this from Svara. He doesn't have a source explicitly. But I think he says, She'im hiskimu kol chacham sheba Eretz Yisrael, if all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael agreed, Limanot dayanim, to appoint dayanim, V'lismochotam, and to give them smicha, Hari elu smuchim. Meaning, if you're lacking this one remaining person that has the uninterrupted smicha, don't worry, says the Rambam, because we can restart the process. We can get the rabbis in Eretz Israel together. We'll see what together means in a minute, and they can agree. We'll see what agree means in a minute, and they can appoint a new Sanhedrin, and that Sanhedrin will be musmachim properly, and they can dan dine knasot. Dine knasot means fines or penalties, which a modern bet din is not able to give. And we saw last week that one of the key historical issues that arose was in the 1530s, there was an attempt, a very serious attempt, to restart the Sanhedrin. We'll talk about that in a minute. Primarily so that that Sanhedrin could administer flogging, lashes, to the Jews from Spain who felt that they needed to do tshuva for having been forced to convert to Christianity, the Anusim that escaped. They felt they needed Malchus, and they needed a proper Bet Din in order to give that, and that was one of the impetuses for this innovation. And they can give smicha to others, says the Rambam. In came, third line at the end. Why were they unhappy? Why were they worried about smicha coming to an end? Says the Rambam. We saw Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava last week, the Gemara there, where he was single-handedly responsible for saving smicha and giving smicha to others during the Roman persecutions. What are they worried about? Says the Rambam. They can just do what I said. Why are they so worried? Because if I'm right, he says, there should be a mechanism to restart it. And now this is a very important phrase. Lefisha Yisrael mufuzarim. Because the Jews were scattered. And we saw last week, scattered means not just geographically, but hashkafically and politically scattered. And they just couldn't agree. They couldn't agree because they couldn't get together physically, or they couldn't agree because they couldn't get it together in terms of agreeing. Ve'im hayosham samach mipi samach. If, of course, we just had could find one person with the uninterrupted smicha, ein otzarech dad kulam. You wouldn't need to get this synod together. Fine. And at the end, he puts these three words in: v'hadavar tzarech hechre. But the matter requires, or and the matter, the vav can be but and it can be and or but the matter requires hechre, some kind of hachra'a, some kind of decision, clarification, solution. Now, what does the Rambam mean? And we saw last time, and how we can introduce the historical background. In the 1530s, there was a very significant move by Rav Yaakov Beirav, who was a Rav first in Egypt, or first in Spain. He was expelled from Spain. He came to Egypt. He came to Eretz Israel. He was in Sfat. And you had this this community of immigrants, of refugees in Sfat, forming this a new, very Kabbalistic community, and they really felt that, and we mentioned this last week, that this was the beginning of a new Reshit Smichat Geulateinu, to put our words in their mouths, meaning the expulsion from Spain. They felt was Gog and Magog. It was the last of the big expulsions. They felt this, the return to Eretz Israel, which was facilitated by the opening up of Eretz Israel by the Ottoman Empire, which invaded just after the expulsion from Spain. And this Ottoman Empire, which was now full of Jews who had newly arrived, these Jews were able to go and set up new communities in Sfat, in Tveria, later, we never mentioned this, but Dona Gracia Mendes, all of these new communities that were able to set up. They felt this was the beginning of a Geulah. We ended last time by commenting that Lecha Dodi, written by one of these very people, Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, Lecha Dodi is a hymn, is a call to arms, if you like, for us to go, v'nivnata ir al tila, let's rebuild the city, let's rebuild Yerushalayim, let's rebuild a Jewish presence in Eretz Israel. It's not just about Kabbalat Shabbat, and therefore one of the things that they did there, Rav Yaakov Beirav, assembled 25 rabbis in Sfat, and they used this Rambam to restart Smicha. He gave them Smicha, they gave Smicha to others, including Rav Yosef Karo, the Al-Sheikh, Rav Chaim Vital, and others that we mentioned. They offered smicha to Rav Levi Ibn Chaviv, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, the Maharal Bach, and he sent it back and said, I don't want the smicha, and I don't agree with the smicha. I'm sure this wasn't a surprise to them. As we said last week, do you ask permission or do you ask forgiveness? He decided to get on with it, do it, and then ask if it's okay. A little bit like Sarah Schneer starting the Beis Yaakov movement, even though we sometimes, you know, retrospectively say, well, she went to all the great Gedolim in Europe and asked their permission. That's not quite how it happened. She went to a couple of people, but the big ones, the Chofetz Chaim, was later. Once she'd already done it, she turned to the Chofetz Chaim and he gave a haskama, etc. But that's not for now. So they sent it to Maral Bach, hoping for the best. It came back with a refusal and said, I don't agree with the smicha. And then there was a back and forth. The Maral Bach wrote a long Kuntras HaSmicha, which is printed at the back of his tshuvas. And the Rav Yaakov Beirav wrote back a response, and they weren't getting anywhere. And they said, we need to send it to someone who will be machriya. Hadava Tzarech Hechreya, right? The Rambam says, you need to decide. They sent it to the Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, who was currently, was that time in Egypt. He was very much the Godel Hador, very respected, and the Radvaz wrote back. And whose side was he on? He was on the side against Smicha. And we never saw this last week, but I want to show you, he gives six arguments, which I want to go through one by one, because we'll see that these become relevant as we look at the more modern attempts to restart the Sanhedrin. Each of these arguments comes into play in a different way. Let's have a look here in number two. So, the first of the six arguments that the Radvaz gives to oppose Smicha is as follows. He says, listen, the Rambam said, Hadava Tzarech Hechreya. He wasn't sure. He never said this anywhere else in the entire Mishnah Torah. This is the one and only appearance. How can you rely on a Rambam if the Rambam himself wasn't sure if he could rely on himself? Which he's not usually shy. And if he's not clear, then you can't be clear. Look at number two. So he quotes the Rambam here, Nira Advarim She'im Hiskimu, if they all agree, etc. Aloshan Zeh Samchu Chachmei Tzvat. On this particular language, the rabbis at Tzvat, they relied. V'hakadol Shebahem Nismoch Smuchin Ladun Dine Knasas. And the greatest of those rabbis, Yaakov Beirav, they gave him smicha to be a judge for Dine Knasas. V'lai Ala B'yadam. But it didn't work out for them. Because the rabbis of Yerushalayim, in particular the leader, the Levi ibn Chaviv, didn't agree with them. They asked me, he writes this in his commentary on the Rambam, they asked me when I was still living in Mitzrayim, that and we didn't actually agree with this smicha, we came out against it. And I gave a very lengthy response to disagree with and to stop this whole project. They didn't look carefully enough in the language of the Rambam. He gives a complicated, the Ibrav Yaakov Beirav argued somewhat hopefully but unsuccessfully, maybe these last three words, Vahadava Tzarech Hechreya, are not talking about the whole question of can we or can't we. They're talking about one of the details, which is, what if there was one person with smicha? Is that good enough to restart the smicha process, or do you need three people with smicha? Meaning maybe these words are talking about another halacha, related to, but not the key thing here. The im hayasham somach b'samach on the third line from the bottom of number two, that's what they're arguing with. Vavadai leisis, that can't possibly be. Because this particular question doesn't need any adjudication. Because the Rambam clearly paskins this. How can you argue that this question mark at the end of the halacha goes back to that issue? The issue was resolved by the Rambam. You only need one with smicha, you don't need three. And we see this from the case of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, who was one, and he gave it on. Imke, al korchachi must be at the last line, when the Rambam says it needs decision, a resha kai. He's going on the main point. The cave and Shehuba Atzma Loif Shitale, since he himself was not clear on it, Eich Nase Anachnu Mase. How can we act on it if he himself wasn't clear on it? Argument number one. By the way, you should know, the later rabbis who debated this also debated what these words could mean, Bahadava Tzarech Hechreya. For example, in the 19th century, Rav Yisrael Yeshua Trunk, the Av Beis Din of Kutna, said maybe it means that even though the rabbis who ultimately decide are those in Eretz Yisrael, maybe the Rambam means you have to consult with the rabbis in Chutz La'aretz. And we'll see Rav Kook picks up on that later on. Okay, maybe the rabbis in Chutz La'aretz are good for something in terms of, you know, deciding this issue. They're good for many things. They're wonderful rabbis. But we saw that it's only the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. So he suggests that. Later on, Rav Benzion Uziel, in the 20th century, we'll see his psak soon. He said, no, what the Rambam means is we have to tread very carefully here. Hadava Tzarech Hechreya, meaning health warning. If you try to do this, it may blow up in your face. Okay? That's a nice chat, but is that what the Rambam really means? That's one suggestion. You should know that Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel from Yeshiva College, he wrote an essay on this, and I gave you a footnote on it, where he suggests that maybe these three words at the end of the Rambam weren't originally there in the Rambam. Now that's quite a suggestion, and one of his proofs is the Rambam is quoted, we saw last week, by the Rashba, by the Meiri, who each have their questions, but none of them actually include those last three words. Which is interesting. The problem is that there are no manuscripts of the Rambam that have ever been found that don't have these last three words in them. Okay, we'll keep looking. But at the moment, that argument seems to not go very far. Go over to page 2. Let's look at the Radvaz's second argument. Number 2. The 2. And furthermore, he says, Shehari Hikshar Rav, in Kain Lama Hayu Hamitzdarim, why, the Rambam asks, why was there so much concern about losing Smicha? Ki Hay Uvda Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We know the story of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava when he single-handedly kept Smicha going. We saw this last week. The Tirits and the Rambam answers, Lefish Yisrael Mufuzarim, that the Rambam, that the Jews were too scattered. Now, says the Radvaz, Mabakach, why does that matter? V'halo v'eretz Yisrael k'roivim zel hazeh. Meaning, even though there were Jews scattered around the world, in Spain, in Bavel, in Yemen, machpatli, why do I care? The only people who matter are the people in Eretz Yisrael. So let there be rabbis scattered around the world. The ones, how big is Eretz Yisrael? In Gans, can't we not get people to reply in Eretz Yisrael? V'hayuchol l'haskim ala smich al yidei shluchim. They could have sent messengers from Israel. Or al yidei igros, they could have sent letters. Really, is it so hard to get the rabbis in Eretz Israel to agree just logistically? Can't be. Elamai, Elamai Islach Alameima, what are you going to say? What does the Rambam mean? Shehayu tzrichim lihiyot kulam b'ma'amad echad. They have to be not just in agreement, but in a collective synod. They have to be together in a meeting and actually agree on this. And the problem is, it was too difficult to get them to all come together. Okay, the Hemufuzarim, because they were all scattered, even in Israel. Halamata, you learn from this, says the Radvaz, that Afilu Lamashe Vinu B'Divrei HaRambam. Even if the Rambam is right, and you can start Smicha, Hayat Sarech Shekol Chachmei Eretz Yisrael Yuba Mamad Echad. You should have done it in a national synod, and he didn't, and therefore it doesn't work. And the rabbis of Sfat did not involve the rabbis of Yerushalayim. Purposely, because they knew they would have arguments about it. They didn't want to start the whole process with an argument. So the Radvaz, that's not how it works. You've got to get everybody together. That's the second argument. The third, number 4, and this we'll see very soon, is very important later on. V'oid, Shinirish Yitzarech HaNismach Ra'ui L'Horot B'chol HaTorah Kula. If you want to be one of these rabbis with smicha, you've got to be suitable, fitting to teach lahorot b'kol haTorah kula. Now we use this phrase sometimes, this rabbi, he knows kol haTorah kula, kol haTorah kula. What does this mean? Who are the people who know enough Torah to get a seat on the Sanhedrin? Says the Radvaz, v'rachok be'einai. It's far-fetched for me, he says, sheyesh b'dor hazeh. I don't think there's anybody in our generation that you can say this about, that's able to teach and to rule in Kol HaTorah Kula. Now that's quite a statement. Think of the people in his generation. The Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, the Alshich, Rav Chaim Vital, the Arizal. No, he says, that's not good enough. They don't count. Now, if they don't count, what hope do we have? And we'll see, that's Rav Kook dealt with this question. We'll see Rav Kook at length. But he says, I don't think these people count. By the way, who is able to qualify as someone who's Ra'ui L'Horot B'Kol HaTorah Kula? Two interesting anecdotes. Number one, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, when he was writing a letter of Haskama, of approval for his son, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the Rav, when he applied for a job as chief rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935, he wrote about him that he was Ra'ui L'Horot B'Kol HaTorah Kula. Wrote about his son, and I'm sure he wouldn't have used those words lightly. Not because you necessarily have universal recall, but universal ability, universal breadth, if you like, to be able to rule in these matters. It didn't help, he didn't get the job. But nevertheless, there is a whole list, by the way, of chief rabbis that never were. Especially in England. England seems to have a great talent at not choosing certain chief rabbis and yes, choosing other ones. Baruch Hashem, England's been blessed with many great chief rabbis, but we've rejected, they have rejected a number of chief rabbis, specifically Rav Hirsch, who was rejected in the 1800s as the potential chief rabbi. They turned his application down and went for Rav Nosson Marcus Adler instead, which is a whole reason based on Queen Victoria giving birth, why that happened, which is not for now. So that was one lost opportunity. Another one was Rav Soloveitchik himself, who applied for the job, or was suggested for the job, of chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth, British Empire at that time, when Rav Hertz died. He was put up for the job, and he was considered, and the story goes, I don't know if it's true or false, that when they discovered, the appointment committee, that he wasn't able to eat with a knife and fork like an Englishman, with a fork in the left hand and a knife in the right hand, he was immediately struck off the list as being inappropriate for further consideration. Now, first of all, I'm sure Rav Soloveitchik was able to eat beautifully if you asked him to, but second of all, says a lot. Later on, when they begged him to take the job, the next time around he says, thank you, I'm busy, I'm already doing other things, but there are lots of chief rabbis that never were. Anyway, the point here is that who is Roy for this? The Chazon Ish, by the way, said he put together a list of 32 people in the mid-20th century that he felt would fit this label. The Chofetz Chaim, he felt, and Rav Meir Simcha, Kohen of Dvinsk. But it's a rarefied list. So that was one point the Radvaz made. Number five, another point the Radvaz, the fourth point he makes is as follows. The Oid. Sheharaya Shekasav Rabbeinu. The Rambam writes, Beferish explicitly, okay, Beferish HaMishnah, sorry, in his commentary on the Mishnah, excuse me, Ledava She'ein Rui L'samoch, okay, L'samoch Alea, he writes the following, V'zela Shonah, She'im Loi Tama Kein. He writes something, he says he doesn't think he's right, he writes the following, that if we don't say that you can restart the Sanhedrin, E'ef She'etim Tzabeit Din HaGod L'Olam, we'll never ever get a Beis Din back. Meaning, how are we going to move forward? We're in catch 22. If you need someone with smicha to give other people smicha, then, and there are no people with smicha, then you'll never make another Beis Din. Lefishin itzdarech shiyeh kol echad mehem samach, because you need the Beis Din to have smicha. Al kol pami v'akodesh baruch hu yad, and didn't Hashem promise, says the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah, sheyashiv k'moshi ne'emar v'ashiva shavtecha shavtai k'rishona v'yotai k'vatzchila. I will restore. God promises He will restore our Sanhedrin. And how can that be? Says the Rambam, unless you say what I say, there is no way out of the catch 22. Says the Radvaz, there is. I give you two suggestions. Umi yitem ve'eda shehari Eliyahu ba'lifnei Mashiach. Don't you remember, he says to the Rambam, Eliyahu is coming before Mashiach. We see this in the Psukim. Yeah? Eliyah Hanavi is coming. And Chazal. He's got smicha. And he's never died. He's just waiting to come back. What are you worried about? He'll give smicha to other people. Before the Mashiach even comes. So you can have Eliyahu Navi. Now, what will the Rambam say to that? Actually, if you look in the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, he said, I'm not sure if Eliyahu Navi is going to come before Mashiach. It's not clear. None of these things are clear. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But the Radvaz says, don't worry, I'm confident he'll come and he'll have smicha and he'll start the process. Number six, another alternative. Vidu, Dibnei Reuven, Atidin Lavo. And I give you another answer. The Bnei Reuven, the 10 lost tribes, and he uses Reuven here as an example, they're coming back. V'lasot milchamot, they're going to make wars. Lifnei bo melech ha-mashiach, before Mashiach comes. Uman leim alan shelo yiyem mahen samach bepi samach. Maybe they kept smicha going. Maybe they've got someone who has got the real smicha. Why do you say there isn't anyone? You don't know of anybody. We don't know of anybody. But there's somewhere out there in the Ural Mountains, or someone waiting to come back, that's going to bring smicha back again. Maybe. For who yismach acherim? Why can't he give smicha to other people? Now again, in the 16th century, maybe this was more of a likely scenario. I'm not sure that we think that there is a group of people waiting to appear. The return of the 10 lost tribes has always been something that people have sought to identify. When Shabtai Tzvi was the false messiah in the 1600s, so one of the groups that they said were coming back was the Scottish. The Scottish were the 10 lost tribes. There was a suggestion and they were sailing back to take their place at the seat of Eretz Israel. The idea of the Scottish coming back to do this is to me, slightly hopeful maybe, but I don't know, there are some fine Scottish people, maybe they will. Well, first I have to work out who can understand what they say before they get on the... Look at number seven. And finally, he says, I give you another suggestion. The two, and a last suggestion, She'amru b'midrash, he quotes a midrashic tradition. Shemashiach yitgaleh begalil, Mashiach will reveal himself in the Galil, and then he'll disappear again. There'll be two comings of Mashiach. We're already on slightly dangerous ground here. Yeah. But the Mashiach will come, we'll go back, and then we'll reappear. Maybe he will use the first appearance, says the Radvaz, to appoint the Sanhedrin, then come back and be ratified by that Sanhedrin. And it could be that because of all of these questions, Vizulatam and other such questions, the Rambam wasn't prepared to rely on what he wrote in the Perish of Mishnah, because of Bapsak, and when he came to Bapsak, he said, Vahadava Tzarech Achre. Now, there are six reasons, good reasons maybe, why the Radvaz thought that the Rambam could not be relied upon in this issue, and the Smicha project ground to a halt. Before we look at the more modern iterations of the Smicha project, let's just look at a parallel debate for 5 minutes, which I think we need to talk about, which is that there's another debate out there which runs in tandem with this, which is, why did we lose the Sanhedrin, and why did we never have a new Talmud? Why did we never get a second Talmud? Why is the Talmud sealed? Under what circumstances can we unpick the Talmud that we have at the moment? This is a separate issue, which I give Shirim on, and it's not maybe the forum to elaborate in great length on that. But why did Rashi never turn around and say, you know something, it's 500 years since the Talmud, let's have a new Talmud, time for a new Talmud. Why did the Rambam never say that? No one ever said that. Which is not the case with other books. For example, the Shulchan Aruch was written in the 16th century. There have been any number of Shulchan Aruchs since the Shulchan Aruch. Every generation seeks to write a new set of halachas for him that's applicable for that generation. Fine. So why not a new Talmud? So, first of all, it's clear that everybody agrees. Look in number 8. Rabbi Nosson, Soif Mishnah. So Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Yudah Anossi was the end of the Mishnah. Rav Ashi v'Ravina, Soif Hara'ah. Whatever Hora'ah means, ruling, decision, psak, Rav Ashi and Ravina was the end of that. And later, Shmuel Hanagid writes as follows in number 9, Trei Shechibru HaTalmud, the two rabbis who are most responsible for finishing and editing the Talmud, Heim Rav Ashi v'Ravina, Visi HaTam, Rav Ashi, Ravina, and their school of thought, Ubi Yameihem Nechtam HaTalmud. The Talmud was sealed, Nechtam HaTalmud. And the Rambam writes number 10, Ka'ashe Mesu Kol HaChachamim Aleihem HaSholem, when all the rabbis died out, She'achroni Mehem Ravina V'Ravashi, the last of whom were Ravina V'Ravashi, Kvar Nishlam HaTalmud, the Talmud was finished. Harikol Mi Sha'amud Achrav, anyone who comes later than that, Ein Matarasa Ela Havanat Divrayim. Our purpose is simply understanding the Talmud, Shechibru Bilvat. Alav Ein Lehoisiv U'Mimena Ein Nigra. We can't add to the Talmud, we can't subtract from the Talmud, we can interpret, understand the Talmud, but the Talmud is sealed, it's sacrosanct. So to the Rashbam number 11, Da Kaimalan, Babava Matsya, Ravashi Varavina Sofara, Ha'ein Adam Rashai Lachadesh Dava Me'ata. No one can now add to it. It's now sealed. Elavadai Kemoshe Pasuk Achronim, like the recent later meaning the Amoraim from the time of the Talmud, Kachnase, that's what we do. There are at least three major approaches as to why the Talmud was sealed. And you'll see that these track the approaches on the Sanhedrin in a minute. Rav Shrugon, which I'll leave you to look at in your own time, but he very much takes the view of Yuridas Hadoris. The reason the Talmud was sealed is because we cannot open up that debate. The world is going down and down and down. And he brings ample evidence from the Gemara itself. The Gemara is in Erevin that say, compared to the, just maybe pick one line out. If you look here in the second line of number 12, I brought you the original Aramaic and a Hebrew translation. I'm in the Hebrew translation, the second box of number 12. Look in the second line. Kamosha Amar Rabbi Yochanan number Erevin. Okay. Liban shal rishonim kepitcho shal olam. The hearts, the minds of the earlier ones, says the Gemara, was like as broad as the opening of the temple complex doors. V'shal acharonim kepitcho shel cheicha, but the later ones were narrower. Okay, and who were the early ones? Rabbi Kiva, the later ones, etc. Meaning everyone is getting narrower and smaller as the time goes on, and there are many other examples there he brings from the Gemara where the Amoraim say, "Who are we? What are we? We know nothing compared to the earlier days." If you take this view, which is that the Talmud cannot possibly be reopened because we're just getting lower and lower, then what is the point of discussing bringing back the Sanhedrin? It's just hevel v'ra'atz ruach. It's just a waste of breath. Because if everything is going down, 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 and we touched on this last week, the only way we can ever come up is miraculously Mashiach will come, bring us up again, and we'll be schlepped from the depths to the heights, and everything will be restored. It has to be a lamala minateva, a miraculous imos of Mashiach, etc. That's one world view. And therefore, this world view, which is the view of many people in Mashiach, if you ask people, how did they teach you Mashiach in high school? Well, Mashiach's going to come, everything's going to be miraculous, and everyone, all of a sudden the whole world's going to change. That's one view of Mashiach, which goes along with this idea of Yerida Sadora. The Rambam disagrees. If you look on page 4, and we need to look at this Rambam in just for a few minutes together, the Rambam himself says that's not why we can't have a new Talmud. The Rambam doesn't necessarily subscribe to Yerida Sadora in the same way. Says the Rambam, and you'll pick up an important word here, number 14. This is in his introduction to the Yad HaChazakah, to the Mishnah Torah. Nimzer Ravina v'Ravashi v'Chavreihem, Ravina Ravashi and their colleagues, Sof Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael, u'Matzikim Torah Shebal Peh. These are the people who transcribed into the book of the Talmud the Torah Shebal Peh, the Oral Law. V'Shegazu Gzeir v'Sehikinu Tzakonus v'Inhigu Minhagos. Okay, they decreed all these new decrees. U'Pashte Gzeirosam v'Tzakenatam u'Minhagosam v'Chol Yisrael. These spread through the Jewish people and were accepted. V'Chol Mekomos Moshe V'Yisam. V'Acha Beidin Shel Ravashi. But after the Bet Din of Ravashi, who wrote the Gemara, V'gomru b'nei b'noi, and it was finished in the days of his sons, Nitpazru Yisrael b'chol ha'atzot. The Jewish people were scattered. Remember that word? We saw it before. Pizur. The Rambam says, if we can bring it all together, then we can have a new Sanhedrin, he said. Here too, he says, the reason we didn't have another Talmud is we were scattered. B'chol ha'atzot. Pizur yetzah v'higiu l'ksot v'yim arachokim. To the furthest islands of the world. Jews even reached there. What is the island on the edge of the world? The edge of the world. Anglaterra. You know, the edge of the world. England, you know, if the Jews can get to England, the Jews can get anywhere. The Rafsa Katata Ba'olam, and there was a great deal of fighting in the world. V'nishtabshu Hadrochim, the roads became impassable. This is the Dark Ages, right? When the Roman Empire fell apart. V'giyasos with highwaymen, v'nidmat Talmud Torah. Geopolitical reasons led to the reduction of Talmud Torah. V'loinichnasu Yisrael l'ilmod b'yeshivos seim. The Jews just couldn't get together in big yeshivas. Alafim v'ravavos in the thousands and tens of thousands, Kamosha Hayim Mikodim, like they used to do. Alibis Kapsim, Yechidim, Hasridim, Hashem, Korib, Cholivrair, Chol Midin, Medina, all the Jews, wherever they could, got together. But Oiskim Batara, they learned Torah. Mevinim, Bechibur, Chachamim, Kulam, Veyodim, Mehem, Derech, Mishpat, Heim. The Rambam says the reason we could never have a second Talmud is just geopolitical. And therefore, he says, after this, which we're not going to read now, therefore any Bet Din that comes after the Talmud does not have the acceptance of all of Klal Yisrael, and therefore cannot bind all of Klal Yisrael. They can bind their own community. They can bind their own group within the Jewish people. But no rabbi can come along now and say, I am the rabbi for the world, you have to listen to me. You can say, no, you're not my rabbi. You can't say that about the Gemara, because the Gemara was put together with a Haskamah of the Jewish people. Leave aside the Karaites for now, they came a bit later. But the Gemara had a Haskamah. Now, of course, the implication to this position of the Rambam is if we couldn't do it before because we were scattered, now that we're not scattered, maybe we can talk about it. If you hold that Yerida Sadoris is the reason for these things, then okay, we can't turn around the clock of Yerida Sadoris. It's going in one direction, according to that view. The Rambam says, no, it's not because of that. It's just because of the logistics. If we can get the logistics together, we can organize it. You see here how the Rambam, these two positions of reestablishing the Sanhedrin, and the reason that we lost the ability to do that, are actually intertwined, and therefore this Rambam, this position, makes it much more possible for us to even think about restarting the Sanhedrin and reopening the Talmud in some way, which of course leads to a very interesting debate about halachic change. How do we change halacha? What can we do? What can't we do? What should we be trying to do? Does this fact that the Jewish people are now gathered together in the state of Israel make a difference? Well, we're not mufuzarim like we used to be. Maybe you'll say, well, we are, in our minds, scattered, maybe more than we used to be, maybe less, I don't know, that's an interesting question. But geographically, we are much more together. Does this mean that we can start thinking halachically more innovatively, or is that dangerous thin ice which we shouldn't tread on? Okay, and that's something I'll leave you to think about. We'll talk a bit more. We've talked about that before. Let's talk for the rest of the shiur about the attempts that we've had over the last 600 years since, 500 years since Svat, to do this again. Now, the attempts to restart the Sanhedrin failed. Why did they fail? Because of opposition from the rabbis of Yerushalayim, also because of persecutions from the Ottomans. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch in number 16, Oynis u'mafata. He brings in Evan Ha'ezer the din of Oynis u'mafata. Oynis u'mafata is a din in the Torah of someone who seduces or, God forbid, rapes a young woman, and there are penalties that he has to pay. Says the Shulchan Aruch, done in Oysa b'shloisha dayanim. We need three dayanim. U'bilvad sheyu smuchim. They have to be smuchim. They have to have the real smicha. Be'eretz Yisrael. And they have to be in Eretz Yisrael. The Ha'edna, and nowadays She'ein Smuchim, that we don't have this anymore, then we have to resort to communal pressure. Menadin Oisa, we put him in Cherim, Ad Shepir said Chaveru, until he says sorry and repays the compensation, etc. Now, you see, it sounds like that's the surrender, that's the white flag. The Shulchan Aruch, which was written after all of these events, says nowadays I'm sorry we don't have Smuchim anymore, and it all failed. Now, you could turn around and say, well, no, he's just quoting the Rif. That's the language of the Rif. Maybe he didn't quite surrender so easily, but there are those who want to suggest, the Chazan Ish says, you see that even the rabbis of Sfat eventually gave up and decided it was a bad idea. And Taka, we don't find any account that they actually did Dan Knasos, and actually judge in penalties. We don't find that they did that, and maybe therefore they agreed with that the whole project was not worth pursuing. However, I just want to point out to you, there is another sefer of Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo was a mystic and he had a maggid. What is the maggid? The maggid was a voice that he communed with and talked to, actually in a little kuch, in a little hole in the basement of his kitchen. If you've ever been to the house of Rav Yosef Karo in Sfat, it's not something which is on the obvious tourist trail. You can get into the shul, that's not hard, but the house, you need someone with a key. So once one of the guides I was with said, do you want me to take you into the house? I said, oh wow, yes please. So we went in the house, and it's been, it's restored and it's been protected there, and there's a little kind of hole under the fireplace there where he used to sit and speak to the Maggid. There was a voice that came to him, and he wrote later on a book called Maggid Meisharim. These are the messages that I received from the Maggid. Now look in number 17. And this is, by the way, a fascinating insight into the life of Rosh Yosef Karo. Ani, says the Maggid to him, he recalls what the Maggid said, this voice in his head. Ani ha-Mishnah, okay, I am the Mishnah, ha-medaberet b'picha, which is speaking through your voice. The Ani, ha-aim, ha-miyaseret et banea, I am the mother who is giving musa to her children, or punishing in some way her children, or guiding her children. Ani hi ha-mitchabeket imcha, I am hugging you. Because I am coming to you, you're coming to me. We are in this communion, says the Maggid. I, says the Maggid to Rav Yosef Karo, will raise you to be the leader of all of the Jewish exiles, Sheba Malchut Arabistan, which are in the Arabistan. I assume that's the Ottoman Empire from Arabia through to North Africa. Vayan, says the Maggid to him, since ki masart nafshecha, since you gave up you had mesiras nefesh al chazarat ateret hasmicha liyoshna, trying to get the smicha back again, tiskeliot musmach, you will merit one day to be a musmach mikol chachme eretz Yisrael bichachme chutz laretz. Meaning, he felt he was being instructed by this Maggid, and he wrote this, as far as I'm aware, later in his life as well. Not just at the beginning. He felt the Maggid was telling him he has to bring smicha back. He has to be a musmach. Val yadcha achse hasmicha. Through you, says the Maggid, I will restore smicha leyoshna to its original state. Ve'eskecha ligmor chiburcha, and you will finish your great work, your Shulchan Aruch. Ubata kein, and after that, and this is very interesting indeed, titukad al kedushat shmi, you will be burnt at the stake and die al kiddush Hashem. V'tistale ka'am anaki, you'll go like a pure lamb. V'tiske l'tchiyat hamesim, you'll come back in tchiyat hamesim. V'tiyam ha'oisim shenem aleim eile l'chay olam haba. Now this is already getting into really interesting ground. Exactly what we feel about a maggid speaking in the mind of the Shulchan Aruch is a very interesting question. He of course was a makubal, and we talked about the Zohar and the Kabbalah in another session. He felt very strongly he would eventually die, burnt at the stake al Kiddush Hashem. He never did. He died as a very old man in his own home. I don't know whether he was happy or not happy about that. That's an interesting question. He felt that his lot in life would be... Where's he getting that from? By the way, there was a very important figure in his youth called Shlomo Molcho. Shlomo Molcho was a quasi-messianic figure. He never claimed that he was Mashiach, but he said he was the beginning maybe of Mashiach ben Yosef. And he said he wanted to go and restart, if you like, a Jewish presence in Eretz Israel. He went to meet for a meeting with the Holy Roman Emperor, carrying a flag. Written in Hebrew on the flag was Maccabi. And he went into this meeting with the Holy Roman Emperor and said, I represent the Jewish people, we're coming home. Which is very interesting, in the 1500s. He was taken, he was burnt at the stake by the Christians. He was killed. And Rabbi Yosef Karo felt this was an incredibly impactful experience for him, because this man was not like Shabtai Tzvi, who proved himself to be a disaster and a rosha on every level, but Shlomo Molcho was someone who made a big impact, and therefore he felt this was his aim. He felt that the return of the smicha was very important. So whether he did or didn't eventually say that, you know, they were right or I was right, that I'll leave you to think about, but there's evidence in different directions. Let's come into the more modern world and see if we can bring it up to date. Things went very quiet for a few hundred years. In the early 19th century, a number of the students of the Vilna Gaon, as we know, came to Eretz Yisrael, particularly Rav Yisrael of Shklov. Rav Yisrael of Shklov, who wrote a book called the Peta Shulchan, in 1830 he tried to renew Smicha and restore the Sanhedrin. He even sent out Shluchim to try and find the 10 tribes, based on what we saw on this Radvaz, where the Radvaz says, don't worry, there's someone out there that will, in the Shevet Reuven, and he wrote them a letter. I quoted a little bit in the footnotes, we have the wording of the letter, and he said, if I can find that you still have a Sanhedrin hiding out there with the 10 lost tribes, I will accept that the halacha is that you can have a Sanhedrin outside Eretz Israel, because I'll support you. They never came back with any serious fines, and therefore it didn't go very far. Interestingly, because the Vilna Gaon himself seems to hold that you cannot restore smicha today, but even that's not 100% clear. But his students definitely felt that this was you might say that these were the first religious Zionists, you might not. Certainly the religious Zionist community traces itself, in terms of its modern iteration, back to the Gaon. That the Gaon's students came to Eretz Israel to push these new ideas forward, and there was an attempt there which did not work. Now, with the mass aliyah to Eretz Israel that started in the late 19th century, a lot of people started thinking about this, in particular Rav Kook. Rav Kook, in 1898, when he was still in Russia, before his aliyah to Jaffa, he wrote a long treatise on the Sanhedrin, and I'd like to bring out a few words from this in number 19. He very much supported the idea of restoring the Sanhedrin. Ki ikar tlunas hamataknim me'olam. The main complaint, number 19, of those who wish to change the halacha, always, haita has always been, shechashvu ki hatakonos va'ahalochas, shenemru zeh, meot va'alafim b'shanim, okay, that these halachas from hundreds and thousands of years ago, ruyot lehishtanot, leruach hazman, we need to update halacha. That's what people claim, that's what people want to say. That there's a big impetus to renew, especially at the end of the 19th century, after a whole century of reform. When God brings us all back, as halo yashva Sanhedrin, it's for sure there'll be a Sanhedrin. They will be the ones who to decide on all these matters. Al minhag, they will do according to the Torah. We have to trust at this stage, 1898 this was. Ki binds the ein safek, without any question at all. The people who will sit in the Sanhedrin will be great, great people. But golim b'Torah, tzadikim, amitim, real tzadikim, v'gam chachmei lev, and very broad minds. Nothing will be lacking with them. They will know what to do, the new, the old. And they will be able to lead the new generation. Now, second paragraph. We have to understand. When God brings us back to our land, and we have our freedom, we have our independence. Now, of course, this was 50 years exactly, before the state of Israel, and he never lived to see the state of Israel, but he said, one day this will happen, we will have our independence. Hello, reshit chovotenu, one of our first obligations, he says, tia lechonen merkaz hadat, will be to bring a religious group center forward. Min din Torah. This is a Torah law. Niyem chuyavim b'mitzvah gedolah shebegedolah shel minu hashoftim. We saw in the Rambam. He holds it's a Torah mitzvah. We have to appoint a Sanhedrin if we can. That's our first order of business. V'rosh l'kulam Sanhedrin gedolah. The first of all business will be the Sanhedrin. Shemimena titzei Torah v'horah l'chol Yisrael. They'll teach the Jewish people. L'hachzir ha'amud ha'gadol hazeh hu yisoy Torah shebal peh al mechonah. This is one of the most fundamental foundations. He says, then we don't have to be worried. Maybe they'll do things which will cause controversy. He says, don't worry, it'll be fine. We won't come to any harm doing a mitzvah. This is a mitzvah. Look in the third paragraph. There's so many things these days which are weak and unclear. Their job is to clarify them. There are so many different minhagim. There's groups, and there's Sfardim, and there's Ashkenazim, and there's Yemenites, and there's Machlokas. Here's the word again, because we're still scattered. They will fix all that. Shalo achos bedat, okay? Shalo achos bedat achat. They will ve'ele bedat acheret, because these people are going in one way and these people are going in a different way. Min gedol ha'poskim. Well, the rabbis are disagreeing. Ubehechreich yu shavim hakol minag echad. We will all come back to one minhag. Now you see in the Rav Kook here in 1898 the seeds of Nusach Achid of Rav Goren, which he tried to bring in. Why should we have Ashkenaz and Sfarad and Eidot HaMizrach? We should have one Nusach. We should have one group. And you see this in the religious Zionist community, very much in the footsteps of Rav Kook, where there's a move in Halacha as well as in Minhag to try and unite. There's more leniencies, for example, on Kitniot. We talked about Kitniot. Because in the religious Zionist worldview, it's like, you know, ideally we shouldn't really be having this group eating kidneyot and this group not eating kidneyot, etc. And therefore there are more leniences when it comes to kidneyot. And I think it's partly coming out of this Hashkafic need to unite to this one. In the Haredi world, kidneyot is sometimes worse than chometz, you know, when they're trying to work out, because they don't take this view. And this is very important. Shema Yoma Adam. Now you might say, last paragraph, says Rav Kook. Hine kol oisa she'ifa gedoyla mishtaberet mipnei rasha machloike shebein Rabbi Yaakov be'rav v'haralbach. Says, you might turn around and say, why am I even raising this now? This whole issue has been broken. It's all been finished by the Machlokas in the 16th century. It's all been said already. Why? What do I have to add? Who can come along in the 20th century and try and fix this debate? Azen, I'm going to give you an answer. He says, "Im yelanu hadin mesupek, nuchal ismach sheyedunu hasanhedrin." If we have a question in halacha, why can't we rely on a Sanhedrin? Hakolpanim leinyanim milim derabono. Can't they forget about dinei knasot and flogging people? Okay, we're not going to give anyone lashes. Let's just get a group of rabbis to decide, at least on rabbinic issues. Don't we anyway say that Sufik on a rabbinic issue, Sufik Drabonon, Lahakel? So if we're going to be lenient anyway, why can't we have a group of people that will give us more guidance? Va'aydin, then he says at the end, Ad kan loy lamadnu midivra machloikas shalahem. Their machloikas really is only ki im ladun dine knasas for nefashas, about trying to make a Sanhedrin with its full powers. Aval al chovat ha-mitzvah lishmo al chol davar. Surely that everyone agrees that you still have to listen to them. Hashe yegidu lecha min ha-mokam ha-hu. Loy matzinu klal sheyu tzloy b'smicha. Meaning, he's a raising chiddush. He says, I'll tell you something else. We can make a Sanhedrin even without smicha. And we need to. Because what we need is a group of people who will be the rabbis for the Jewish people. Even if they don't have full powers to give lashes, to give capital punishment. Even if they don't have smicha. Until Mashiach comes. He is very idealistic. In 1898, before he had to deal with all of the realities of the politics, when he was still in Russia, then he was very, very idealistic and positive about bringing back the Sanhedrin. We will see the evolution of Rav Kook's thought as he becomes more and more embattled by the politics through the 1910s, 20s and 30s. In the end, his vision was still there, but the reality of the politics tempered his enthusiasm a little bit. Other examples. In 1901, Rav Aaron Menachem Mendel HaKohen from the Ashkenazi community in Cairo, and I must tell you, maybe I'm ignorant, but I didn't even know there was an Ashkenazi community in Cairo, but clearly there was, and he was one of the rabbis there. He issued a kol kaira to the rabbis of the world at that time, getting them to join together in calling for a Sanhedrin. This is 1901. This is the second Aliyah already. And basically, you can read, I'll tell you who has some very good essays on this, is Rabbi Shimshon Nadel, who speaks here in the OU Center. He wrote this up. I brought you the reference here to where he has this online. He wrote it up also in Torah Tidbits. But he also put out an essay in 1911 saying that we should restore the Sanhedrin. His view was, let's start with three people. A Sephardi Rav, a Lithuanian Rav, and a Hasidish Rav. Let's put those three. I don't know what the Yemenites would have said about this. But let's put those three together at the beginning. This also met with great opposition. One of the main opponents was Rav Chaim Berlin, the son of the Nativ, who did oppose this, but other people supported it. The Ritvas, Rav Chaim Vilovsky, supported this as well. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski wrote about this in Europe and said that the whole suggestion of having a Sanhedrin was a chutzpah gedola. Chutzpah gedola. Okay? And you can understand why. Many people coming out of the 19th century, many Rabbanim were heavily influenced by the Chadash Asa Min HaTorah. That the way that we go forward, that the Chasam Sofer's view in Hungary, in Pressburg in the 1800s, that the way we deal with people who wish to push the envelope is not to try and help them, but to build a wall and say, you can't, we can't do anything. Even stuff which is okay, really, halachically, we're not meant to do. And we looked at this, if you remember, we're on Baruch Hashem, Shir number 140. Shir number one was Bat Mitzvah, the first one we did in this series. And there we looked at all these different views of people when it came to Bat Mitzvah. What could be more innocuous than having a simcha? I'm not talking about laning, I'm not talking about just having a party to celebrate a girl coming to maturity at 12. And we saw there the different opinions ranging from, this is a fantastic innovation. Okay, it was started by reform, but not everything they ever decided was a bad idea. Sometimes they had good ideas. Let's do it. From everywhere from there to, this is Avodah Zarah, Giloy Arayas, and it's absolutely prohibited on every level. So innovation, it's not surprising that there are those who oppose the innovation. Two more points from Rav Kook. Just for now, number 20 and 21. Rav Kook, in 1910, he was already the chief rabbi of Jaffa. He was a little bit more circumspect. Look at what he suggests. Hineni bezeh la'avi edati. I want to give you my opinion, he says. People are trying to put together this, the smicha and the Sanhedrin. There's another attempt. Ein hashara oy lekach klal. This is not the right time. He says, not right now. We won't get people who listen to us. We'll get so much opposition from every single angle. Maybe they're right. Maybe Taka, they're right. Hador hazeh. This generation, says Rav Kook, katanhu le'ein shu b'datzo. We're not with it. We don't have it. Shivlut le'ein cheke neged hakadmoinim. Compared to earlier generations, the Rav Kook says we can't do it yet. Rakratim boididim yeshnam hayotzim in a cloud. There are certain individuals who are exceptions, but most of us are just not up to it. Ve'ein l'chadavar she yorer timhon v'loyaz olaz. There's nothing that will brew up more opposition. They're trying to do this now, it's not right. What can we do? So you remember the Rabbanut was not yet set up, 1910. What we can maybe do, he says, is Rach lahakil asifat rabbanim gedola, asifat rabbanim gedola, ba'aretz hadak ba'aretz hakodesh, v'liten la tchuna kongresit. We'll have like a rabbinic congress. Every year, or every 2 or 3 years, this rabbinic body will get together. V'hita sim lev, and this will pay attention. L'chol inyanei uma, all the Jewish national issues, policy issues of the day. Rak nikhanes b'chug anshe kodesh oivei Hashem. Who needs to call it the Sanhedrin? Once you call it the Sanhedrin, everyone's going to jump up and down and scream. Let's just make a rabbanut. Let's make a rabbanut that everybody can support, and let that rabbanut have an annual or biannual congress, and that will deal with these pressing issues of the day. Okay, interesting. By 1921, they had got a rabbanut. The rabbanut was already set up. Rav Kook, here's his, I'm giving up on the Sanhedrin for now. We'll have to wait for Mashiach. But not everyone agreed, and we haven't got full time now, but Rav Uziel, Rav Benson Uziel, who was the first Sephardi chief rabbi, in the 1920s, 30s, pushed very strongly for a Sanhedrin. He said, we absolutely need a Sanhedrin. Look here in the second paragraph of 22. Ein ani yodea, I'm not sure, he says, im doreinu zakai lakach, if we will really merit this, lageshet lechidusha shabed din agadol, mitzad hachsharata o zchuto. I don't know if we have the abilities or the zchut to make a Sanhedrin. Aval vadai huli, shehu chayav lakach betokef echrech hashav. But boy, do we need it. We need a Sanhedrin, he said. Shat yitzira zo shebet Yisrael holechu mitkanes be'eretz. Now that we're coming back to the land, he said. Okay. We have a lot of societal problems, and now this was 100 years ago. We have more now. We need this group of people to give us solutions, to guide us, to lead us on these problems. Al yisad haTorah masorah. The Herotenu, Tiyen on Nishmat, okay? Here, Herotav, sorry, the Horotav, the psak of this body will be listened to. Umukubelet lechol Yisrael will be accepted by all the Jewish people. In Nachmitz et Hashah, if we let this slip, if we don't take advantage, Chashani Ma'oid, I'm very worried, he says, Shehinenu Ma'abadim b'yadayim, Shot Hechshe, we will lose the window of opportunity. V'niyeh Achraim lifnei ha'elokim, we will be liable before God, v'lifnei kol am ha'yoshev be'er. Okay, we can't let this slip. We will be called to account in the heavenly court or the earthly about having not taken advantage of this. Nekumana, let's get up now. V'nakim et bet din agadol b'Yerushalayim. Let's establish the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim. Like it eladon din iknasad din nefashad. Not so that we can have these higher level judgments. But like it elahatir b'chorot b'mayim. All the things that people accuse us of trying. No, we don't want to do that. Ela kedei livtor she'elot ha'chayim, to resolve life problems ha'amot yom yom b'yishuvenu ba'olamim. Rav Benson Uziel was very, very strong, calling for the Sanhedrin. And others listened to him. Look at the last page. I'll mention a couple of things. In 1938, Rav Svi Makovsky published a comprehensive study on the topic, the Ashiva Shoftaich, and he sent letters around to different people. There's actually a tshuva, we haven't got time for it right now. In number 23, Rav Kook wrote in 1935, right at the end of his life, about this issue to Rav Makovsky, and he said, I understand what you're trying to do, but again, we can't do it now, he said. You need a gradual approach. He suggests some kind of world rabbanut. Now they have the Israel rabbanut. He said, let's make that the world rabbanut. Let's sit for a month every year, and all the rabbis, the senior rabbis of Chutz La'aretz, will come together with the senior rabbanut of Eretz Israel, and they will be the ones to try and give guidance on the world's problems. I don't think this is an impossible task. I mean, we may think it's difficult, but that was Rav Kook's final vision, if you like. Not to push for a Sanhedrin, but to at least have this global rabbanut. As people know, Rav Maimon, Rav Yehuda Leib Maimon, the first minister of religion in the first Knesset, he began a major initiative to restore the Sanhedrin. He wrote articles about it. He wrote a whole book about it. He put together a conference in Tiberias, of course, Tiberia, which is the place where the Sanhedrin will be restored. But it failed. Very few people came. The Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi, was against it. He said it's not going to work. The Chazon Ish writes about it, that it's a laughable venture. It's just ridiculous. How we possibly have the chutzpah to even talk about this, he follows that view as well. And Rav Maimon's institution also failed. In our time, I brought you at the bottom here, there was a group put together in the 2004-05, headed at the time by Rav Steinsaltz, who wanted to put together a Sanhedrin. I brought down a few references there. They sent out flyers to different communities to try and put it together. And they, for about 5 or 6 years, were quite active as a group of people on policy issues, putting out statements, etc. It's kind of petered out now. It had a lot of support with Arad Sheva and a lot of this kind of that group of Klal Yisrael. It's less active now than it was, and the reason it's not a Sanhedrin is because it's not supported. But the idea is, it's not supported by most of the Jewish people anyway. But the idea is there, and I don't think this is the end of the shir. I should really put at the end of the shir, ... What's going to happen next? Because this is an ongoing issue, and hopefully this will give us inspiration to not only daven for Ashiva Shavtai Kivrishoina, but maybe even we'll have the chance to do something about it, which will actually work. Klal Yisrael will come together and agree, and we'll move forward on this issue.